Hello and welcome to Outside In. I'm John Burns and this is the podcast for folk who are interested in the outdoors, committed to going outdoors, or maybe not be able to do so much right now because of obvious reasons. Today in the studio with me, I've got Davey Black, who is the Access and Conservation Officer for Mountaineering Scotland. Brought Davey along, I thought it was a really important, a good time to talk to Davey because as all of you will know, right now we're end of July. End of July everywhere, I guess, but we're slowly working our way out of lockdown, and that's brought all kinds of challenges for everybody in the outdoor community. You know, working your camp, working your not camp, how we're going to manage in the future. So I thought it really important to talk to Davey, who's been working on this, and to get his perspective. Hi, Davey, how are you?
Hi, John. I'm doing fine, thanks.
Would you like to tell us what your role with Mountaineering Scotland actually involves? What's your job?
Oh, it's quite wide ranging. Access and conservation is the title, and I'm involved in sort of maintaining our access rights and promoting our access responsibilities as well. That's quite an important thing to remember. Uh-huh. We have the right, but we also have a duty to be responsible in exercising those rights. I have a whole range of conservation issues too, from development, hill tracks and such like, forestry, the wildlife of the uplands. It's quite wide ranging actually.
So you've got a fair amount to do there by the sound of it.
I don't get bored, John. I don't get bored.
It doesn't sound like it. Now, as you know, right at this stage, wild camping and camping has been allowed generally, and there's been a lot of controversy on social media and about some of the things that have been going on, concerns about people littering and the sheer numbers of people camping at the moment. What's your take on that? Where do you think we're going with what's happening right now?
Yeah, the wild camping sort of issue at the moment is really to the fore. I think that's a lot of it's coming from our sort of COVID-19 lockdown experience that we're coming back out again. And coupled with the uncertainty of going abroad, it's a very attractive option. Despite the weather, the rain, the midges, it's still quite an attractive option to go camping in Scotland. And more people will be doing that this summer, I would imagine. So it's going to actually bring more people into a rural context, which may or may not be ready to receive them.
And there's been, it's fair to say, there's been a fair amount of hostility about people and what people have been doing. So it sounds to me, to be honest, that you've got a lot of people coming out camping who wouldn't normally camp and are not aware of the kind of, as you say, responsibilities to actually look after the place you're camping in. What could we do about that? Because the people have been hammered, have been criticised. There's people, threats of violence and all sorts of stuff on the internet, which is not helping anybody. How do you think that can be best managed? That there are people coming into the countryside who don't really know how to behave, basically.
That's a very good question. It's it comes down to actually what is it we're talking about here? What is wild camping? Now, when you look at the Land Reform Act from 2003 and the Scottish Outdoor Access Code, it says it's lightweight, it's a tent. You can spend two or three nights in a place and you do it well away from roads and buildings. So that's what is meant by the wild camping. It's a very lightweight sort of a pedestrian or cycle or horseback type activity. It's not using vehicles. Vehicles don't come under the Land Reform legislation, the access rights legislation. So the likes of cars, camper vans and motorhomes, they come under road traffic regulations, and it's a completely different scenario there, because our right is only to take the tent. And where access rights apply, we can put a tent up for a couple of nights. That's the crux of it. Anything else is a much wider issue concerning management of traffic and tourism and such like.
Right, so it depends on. I've heard a lot of controversy. I've just bought myself a big tent, you know, and so if I can carry my tent basically any distance, which might take some doing, I'm legally allowed to camp there. Is that correct?
As long as the access rights apply, yes, I think that's true. There's a perception that wild camping is a remote thing, the sort of thing that the hardy mountaineers do. You go away in the hills, and it's remote, and it's lightweight, and nobody sees you, and you pick things up after you. That's not what all wild camping is. Wild camping can be a personal perspective as well. Depends on your abilities. That sort of wild, remote thing might not be accessible to everyone. And it could be attractive for someone who goes somewhere, maybe even just 5 minutes from where they've parked their car, and it's out of the way. It's not bothering anyone, maybe down by a loch side somewhere. It's the tent, no facilities. And it's that sort of wild camping which is attractive to quite a lot of people. And that is perfectly legal too. Where your access rights apply, you can do that. You don't have to go up in the hills. It happens to be wherever your access rights apply, you can. Wherever you can lug your tent as well, then you can have your access. You can have your wild camping there. As long as you do it responsibly, of course. You don't want to do it in fields with livestock or crops and such like. So you've got to be aware of the responsible aspect of it. And the Scottish Outdoor Access Code does provide advice on that. Maybe it just needs more awareness of what it is that you can do.
Right. That's good news for me, because obviously Bothies are closed at the moment, you see. So I've got my tent, and I'm going to... It's basically a mobile Bothy. That's what I'm trying to create.
Well, good luck carrying that.
Yes, exactly. The fire might be a bit of a problem. But, okay, so what is... Are mountaineering in Scotland doing anything to like help, you know, promote the values of responsible camping then?
We certainly are. We've got a new campaign we're launching because of all this negativity in the social media, which we think it could be counterproductive. There's calls for bylaws and all sorts of things like that. Wild camping is actually a very positive experience, barring the mess that's left behind by a minority. Mm-hmm. This is where it gets quite difficult to evaluate all this, because if you do it properly, you don't know you've been there.
Yes.
It's like you've left the site like you've never been there. There might be a patch of flattened grass. So. Yeah. What we're seeing is the minority, and it gets circulated around in the echo chamber that is social media, and it gets this negative impression that, oh, wild campers are dirty campers and they leave a mess. Let's stop this sort of thing. And that's not necessarily the case. There is an antisocial element there to do these sort of things. And if you're leaving litter, you're chopping down trees to try and set fire to them, which is not a good idea, because greenwood doesn't necessarily burn all that well.
Yeah.
So it's a lack of understanding of what they're doing, really. So there's all these issues in there, but some of them they're covered by existing legislation for sort of criminal activities and littering and such like. What people who are doing wild camping properly, you might not even know they've been there. So we're seeing a skewed response, I think, to minority, which is souring it for all the rest of us who want to enjoy this great experience.
Yeah, yeah. So you say you've a campaign to promote responsible camping. Is that what form is that going to take? What kind of messages are you trying to get across with that?
Well, we're calling it considerate camping, the considerate camping code. It's looking at all of the elements from that constitute camping, from way up, if you're up 700, 800 metres up the hill, mm-hmm. to 5 minutes from your car. Where it's parked, you know, there's elements within there which we think are common to all types of this informal camping. And we're looking at fires and cooking food. We're looking at water. We're looking at where do you go if you need the loo. And then litter as well is the fourth element of this. So these are all the component parts of how to be a considerate camper within the responsibilities of the access legislation.
Let's pick that apart a little bit. You mentioned fire. Obviously, fire's a big one. I've seen whole hillsides ignited by sparks from campfires. That's obviously not what we want to do. So, what's the message about having a campfire? Is it a total no-no, or what do you think?
Well, campfires are lawful under the access legislation, but you've got to be very careful, and it's a very tricky business. It's a skill to light a campfire, really.
Yes, yes.
And I think, in all honesty, we try to discourage that and suggest that camping stoves are actually the easiest, quickest way to cook food.
Yeah.
And they leave no mess behind. Because the lighting of campfires, it can easily cause environmental damage without you even knowing it. And it's a small campfire. If you were building a campfire, you would keep it small, and supervised, under control, and even bring your own fuel. Because if you get a campfire going in a woodland nearby, you're taking the dead wood. I think that's only a wee bit I'm using. And then the next person comes along, has a fire, gathers some more dead wood. And before you know it, that whole woodland is depleted of its dead wood, which is an essential part of its whole process of living, because it's got to decompose, and there's lots of wildlife involved in the decomposition. It puts the nutrients back into the ground and allows the trees to grow. So what you're doing is actually having an impact on this woodland by using all the dead wood.
So yes.
We're saying that a campfire, if you want to go camping and eat, then you may not have any fuel around, so take a stove with you. It's really the best bet. And I said, don't watch with heather, especially in dry weather. Heather can burn, grass can burn, trees can burn, and you don't want to lead to wildfires that burn woods and hillsides, the whole hillsides, as you've mentioned in there. Another point to work out on here, because I'm talking about all these negatives in here, this is why we say stoves are really better. Don't light a fire on peat, because peat's quite tricky, as it can linger, the heat in peat can linger, and it can reignite maybe hours after you've gone, days after you've gone, and it can start to burn again. So peat's very tricky, so avoid all peat. So you're actually if you're looking at the environmental implications of having a campfire, there's a lot of places that you wouldn't do that if you want to be considerate for the environment.
Yeah.
Where there's no grassland or heather around, you know, to avoid the woodlands and avoid peat. You say you can do it on stones, and again, you get the scorch marks as well. So the best thing to do is actually clear up all signs of where you were. So if you've got a small fire on some stones, maybe a shingle beside a loch or something like that would be acceptable. You keep it small and under control. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if you just want to cook food, it's a lot better to actually use a camp stove. And don't, whatever you do, take a portable barbecue with you.
Yeah, I did see, I went once on a Leave No Trace course, and they had a fascinating way of creating fire. What they did was they took a piece of sacking, essentially, put that down on the grass, and then built on top of that about 4 or 5 inches of essentially sand, and then had the fire on top of that. And much to my amazement, when we extinguished the fire and we took away the sacking and the sand, there was nothing, not even a mark on the grass. But that's quite a sophisticated technique. I mean, I suppose the message really is that fires are really pretty much something to be avoided, really, aren't they?
They are, yes. It's so much easier to take a stove and some spare fuel with you as well for your stove. Don't forget that. Just get you running out of gas.
Good idea.
And it's a quicker way to cook your food and brew up a cup of tea rather than relying on an open fire or a portable barbecue for that sort of thing. They cause too much damage, really.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to take away.
So what do you think are the other most crucial messages that you're trying to get across with this campaign then?
Take your litter away with you. Don't leave things behind. And if you can see with tents being left behind, there's a disposable culture.
There is.
It's looking at the litter in the round as in, well, why take single use and disposable stuff with you? Take reusable stuff with you and then take it back and then you can reuse it again. I think some of the problem could be tents are so cheap. You can buy a tent for what, 20, 30 quid, 40 quid quite easily. You know what it's like. You've been out at night. It's rained overnight. You're going to pack up the next day. Your tent's sodden. What are you going to do with it? And it can be very enticing if you've only paid, 25 quid for this two-man tent to think, just leave it behind. Whereas the best thing to do is actually bundle up, take a bin bag with you, collapse it. You don't have to roll it away there and then. Collapse it, roll it up, stick it in a bin bag, carry it back out, and then dry it at home.
When
I was a kid, my tent was something I really looked after. And there was something that you took out. Not so much a pride in, but you had a bit of respect for it. And it was there to last you for some time. I don't think tents have that same sort of feel for folk now. I take my tent now, and it, I do look after it. It wasn't a cheap one, and it's sturdy, and it does well in all sorts of upland conditions, and I look after it in there. But I don't know if a more sort of casual camping approach understands the sort of the value of having sort of longevity in your kit. It's very easy just to go and buy a new one.
I think maybe it comes partly from the sort of festival tradition that a lot of people will be used to, where most, well, it appears to me, a lot of festival goers just sort of walk away from their tent, you know? So yeah, what...
That's right. I've seen that at Bilado, where you get fields and fields of tents behind. I think that festival, that's a good analogy there, John, because that festival analogy where things are provided for you, you have your facilities in there, you have toilets, you have bins, yeah. You have food. If you're going away into the sort of the countryside, away from a formal campsite, you don't have these facilities. So where do you go if you need the toilet? Where do you get your water from? Food you've got to take with you. So all these things have to be thought about in advance and take a bit of preparation. And it's not just a question of sling it in the back of the car, roll up, and then you're sorted. There's more thought to it, and maybe there's a culture of having to sort of, that hasn't been thought through properly. How do you actually go camping where there aren't any facilities for you? And that's what we're trying to get across in our Considerate Camping campaign, is the basics. Here's what you have to do before you go. Have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? Have you thought about something else? Go out and have a great time then.
So how are you going to get this message out then? Physically, you know?
Physically. We've got we're going to do some of the usual sort of graphics, social media,
right.
Posters, talking to people like yourself, John, and getting the message across that there's a whole range of things to look for. They're quite simple, as long as you take heed of them, and you can have a great and enjoyable and safe time out in the countryside where you are taking care of the countryside, you're respecting the interests of other people, and you're taking responsibility for your own actions.
Well, that's that. Perfect. That sounds great. I mean, will you have car stickers? That's what I want.
There's a point. There's a thing. I'll bear that in mind. Be a considerate camper car sticker. Yeah.
Yeah. You see, that's there you go. You see, and then you're actually taking the message. Hopefully, where you're camping to the people who are camping alongside you.
That's a very good point. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no fee for that, by the way. That's free.
Is that a freebie? Thanks, John. I'll take that freebie.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Can I ask you, there seems to me some really complex questions being asked of the outdoors right now, because you've got, particularly, I live in the Highlands, and obviously the small communities in the Highlands who have, you know, lived literally, their lifeblood has been tourism for decades. And suddenly there are aspects of the press or the bits of people saying that that these communities are beginning to say, well, actually, we don't want these type of people here. We're against this. Yet there's the contradiction that we in the Highlands have had the doors wide open and have said, come on all, for years. And you know, controversies like the West Coast, the North Coast 500, where you know you've had a massive publicity campaign, but hardly any infrastructure put in. I think we particularly in the Highlands, maybe need to ask ourselves the question: just how are we going to manage visitors? What are we going to just bring? Pack in as many as we can, or are we going to limit it, or are we going to go in certain areas right the way down the way American national parks have gone, where access is very, very rigorously controlled? This all seems to me to be looking at a strategy to the future. Well, what are your views on that? Well, on those sort of really wide issues.
That's a very good point. There's a lot of different issues bundled up in that.
Yes.
I can try and unpack them.
All right.
I think the first thing to recognise is you need to separate the behaviour from the activity. If you undertake wild camping with a tent and do it responsibly and considerately, then you can go there and leave no traces, like you've never been there. And that's not a problem. wild camping in itself is not a problem. It's the behavioural aspect of people who may not know, not have the facilities there, or not understand what it is they're doing. And I think you're quite right on there with the infrastructure. The way that camping is and caravanning and motorhoming has changed is quite significant. There are people now who aspire to retire and have their motorhome and their e-bikes, and they can feel free and move around the Highlands. That's the way that people are touring in the Highlands now. I think a lot of people are doing that now. And they may not wish to use a sort of a all-singing, all-dancing campsite with all the facilities. They may use that maybe once or twice on a trip. Other times they might just want to have a quiet night, looking down the loch side, on the hillside somewhere, and have a wee quiet time to themselves as they move around. Are there more of these sort of low-cost camping pitches available? I mean, sometimes all you may need is a long-drop toilet and a standpipe. That's what you need in there. You don't need all the facilities. Sometimes you need to be able to dispose, if you're talking about motorhomes, you need to dispose of your wastewater in there as well, that sort of thing. So there's these sort of facilities. Where do people go? You're driving along in your camper van, which is a different sort of tourist camping from the wild camping with a tent. As I said, I think at the beginning, the two are different activities in there. These people are looking for a good time. They want to know where they can park up safely, dispose of stuff easily, go for a meal somewhere. And it's that sort of tourism, I think, that hasn't been addressed. There's a lot of local communities are concerned about damage to verges, waste getting dumped in burns and such like. Sure. And I think the solution for that comes with what you might call a form of community planning. It's well known in urban societies where you have resources on short supply. So you plan, say, what does the community need? Where do we get the resources from? Who's going to supply what? And you take it forward. That, I think, is the way forward in the rural communities. Is there a problem in your area? Yes, but what is the problem? Rather than say, oh, it's wild campers, let's put a bylaw ban on it. That just moves the problem to someone else who has to deal with it. It's saying, well, what is the problem? Is it waste disposal? Is it antisocial party camping? How do we deal with that? What's its location? How do we deal with it? Do we need to put in more parking areas for people to park if it's irresponsible parking? Is it waste disposable? Where do we put up notices saying you can dispose of your grey waste here, here, and here? Right. So that sort of tourism infrastructure and management has come behind the success of like the NC500. That's a great marketing exercise. I think you should be proud of that, really having that sort of, they think, wow, this is great. Well, the marketing actually worked, but the means of facilitating it and coping with it has fallen so far behind it that it's causing all sorts of problems.
So what you're really envisaging then is if I'm catching you right, is small localized solutions to the kind of problems that sort of small communities are facing. I mean, I can remember what we seem to have had over the years is like an almost uncontrolled growth of large campsites. When I began camping many moons ago now, there was a standpipe in a field and a toilet, and that was it. But then over the years, more and more facilities and shops, bigger and bigger campsites have grown up. Whereas it seems to me what you're suggesting is actually what we need is downsize, but a lot more campsites in small areas to kind of spread the load. Is that the sort of thing that you're envisaging?
That's what I'm envisaging, yes. It's I think a lot of the campsites are offering the sort of three-star Michelin experience, as it were. You may not wish to dine in a three-star Michelin restaurant, and a takeaway might do you. It's that sort of way of looking at it. So low-cost camping is very popular. The wild camping is very popular as well. And it's a different sort of audience. And we think we need to be more flexible in how we, as a society, obviously, look at how we accommodate these things. Where do you park? Yeah. Where do you park your motorhomes? They're quite big things. Fire hazards as well, if you've got pressurized gas in them. You've got your camper vans, which may not have the same facilities as your motorhome. Uh-huh. You have people in cars who wish to go wild camping, parking your car overnight, two nights or so. Well, we need to think about how do we open up space, and there's a seasonality to this as well, where facilities can get inundated. And I've seen instances of where landowners will open up fields, mm-hmm. allow for more camping, mm-hmm. More car parking, but it's not necessarily a fixed feature. It's a response to a seasonal influx, and it's dealt with then and moved out. More portaloos. Why not have more portaloos if we suddenly find there's an influx in a certain area? Get up the portaloos. That way you deal with the toileting problem, and you can take them back away again when that seasonality is gone. So that sort of summer vehicle tourism management is causing a big problem with communities. It's not necessarily the wild campers. And again, antisocial camping, that's another issue. And that needs to have a personal touch. Police are quite stretched with that one. We have hardly any countryside rangers these days. But there's no one there to talk to people and help them understand the context in where they're camping. They may not understand that it's a certain field, that maybe the farmer's lambing field, and they're setting fire to a fire pit or something like that. But it could be easier to say, well, if you just move 100 metres down the road, there's a fine spot there, you can put your tent up and you can sit there quite happily and leave your car there. So it's the understanding of this countryside sort of the rangering aspect, which helped ease things. And that's missing. There's very few rangers around actually doing that sort of thing. And I think it maybe comes from a lack of understanding from it's the etiquette of camping, a lack of the realization of the practicalities of it, what they're around in. If you're coming from an urban context, you don't necessarily know the rural cycle of life and what your impact is. And it's this etiquette of camping, I think, it needs to be promulgated a wee bit more. Much more awareness of what you're doing, where you're doing it, and how it impacts other people.
Right. Yeah. Can I? One last question, really. I'll just stray into the area of Mountain Bothies, which, as you know, has garnered for many years a lot of controversy, and there have been certain bothies that have been perhaps overused, and there's been a lot of concern within the fairly small bothian community that there is that their bothies are being exploited in some way, or they're being overrun. You know, obviously we can't use bothies right now, which makes things very simple, but hopefully bothies will be opened up at some point in the very near future. Do you think that we'll get the same kind of issues that wild camping has brought in the bothy context?
That's an interesting one to answer. I think it depends on where the bothy is, how accessible it is from the roadside.
Yeah.
By lugging because some of them have suffered from what you might call vandalism, as it were, antisocial behaviour in there. That's unfortunate. Again, it's seen as a free alternative to paid accommodation. Where in a lot of paid accommodation, you can't sit up over a fire at night having a drink with your pals and having a laugh. There's that sort of social aspect in which a lot of accommodation doesn't allow you to do. Just the setup of it doesn't allow you to have that sort of informal social setup where you can sit around a fire and swig a whiskey or whatever it is you want to do, and a cup of tea, whatever your favorite potion is. So it's a great way of meeting people, and if you've never done it before, you can meet all sorts of people, and it's a fantastic eye-opener for folks to go, this is a great benefit for society to come and do this sort of thing. And I think there is a desire to be able to mingle and have that social interaction in there.
Yeah.
It's the antisocial bit again, I would separate out the behaviour from the activity. That's quite the important thing. And how do you tackle that? I don't know, John, to be honest with you. It's a very difficult one, especially in more remote areas. It's quite a hard one to tackle.
Well, I think you've actually suggested it yourself, in the sense that we need a considerate bothying campaign, don't we?
Certainly do.
See how I jumped in there, you say. Okay. Well, when will we expect to see your campaign take off? When is it all kicking off?
Well, we've started already with our littering aspect of it. We've got our Tack It Hame anti-litter campaign.
Oh, right, okay.
where you pick up your, remember to pack up your litter. We're advocating folk to actually put a special bag in the rucksack so that when you've got your litter, you're, so you're eating your cereal bar, you're finished with whatever it is you're eating, you've got your bag there already, you can stick it in, take it back home, and then do what you want to do with the litter. Something when you go to landfill, something you can recycle, rinse your bag out, and then take it again. We've got special bags we're doing that. We've got special Mountaineering Scotland packet aim bags. They're quite an accessory these days. You can see them on our website. But the commercial plug in there, John.
And, absolutely.
And it's a good way of looking at the sort of inadvertent littering in the hillside. A lot of it gets blown away. You find most of the litter is actually around car parks and roadsides. Hillgoers. But we're also asking folk, if they feel safe, I mean, making sure in times of COVID-19, you've got to feel safe when you're doing this, but to pick up the other litter that you see on the hill as well.
Yes.
Because I think the key thing, and a message is very simple, if we don't do that, who will? It's going to sit there for some time, and it can take years, decades, centuries even, for some of the plastics to rot down.
Absolutely.
And it's just littering the hillside. It builds up over time. So that's our litter campaign, is to pack it home, yours and somebody else's. And that's the first aspect, first element of our considerate camping thing. We're going to be rolling it out through August, so expect to see it soon. We'll have some nice graphics, we'll make a bit of noise about it. And we want everyone to come along and enjoy the positive experience. And actually show your photographs of your campsite with your tent up there, and once you've taken it down again. And then show us that you've camped there as if you'd never been there. But that's the sort of messages to counter the negative messages of all the litter.
Absolutely.
How you do it properly.
Well, in fact, that's I think that's a really good idea to promote a lot of the real positive camping. I mean, certainly I camped up in Sutherland recently in a rather large, elaborate Chinese tent, which was almost blown away. But when I left, all there was, as you say, was an area of flat grass. And so that's been really fascinating, Davey, and I wish you all the best with your considerate camping, considerate bothering, and considerate hill going. Okay, thanks very much. All the best with your campaign.
Thanks, John.
And just to let you know that I've got a couple of podcasts coming up, a couple of guests that you might be interested in. I'll be talking to David Hetherington, who is the author of The Lynx and Us, about reintroducing the lynx to the Highlands. And I'll also be interviewing wildlife photographer James Roddy about his work in the Highlands and about the guiding and his explanation of our wildlife. Two really fascinating podcasts to come. I do hope you've enjoyed listening to what we've done today, and I hope to see you again in the future. You take care. Bye bye.